Well, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Oh, my goodness. This is so nice. I missed you all.
Yeah, missed you. Likewise.
Seems like a long time. It's just really wasn't that long, but I carried you around with me wherever I went. So let's do introductions around.
Violet.
Ron.
Blake.
Kathy.
Ross.
Cub.
Nico.
Yeah.
Jeffrey.
Mary.
Wendy.
Leslie.
And Angie. So, yup, haven't seen you for a long time.
That's true.
Yeah.
I was visiting my little nephew in the Netherlands.
Yes. Yes, the baby came.
Exactly.
Yes. Very cute, I bet.
Very much, yes.
Yes. Haven't seen you, Mary, for a while either.
Yeah, I'm most time being in New York.
Uh-huh.
So, winter time.
Yes.
I'm here to see my parents.
Oh, very good. It's that time of year. We all have to do those things.
Yeah.
Reunion everywhere. And Lake came flying down here, too.
Okay.
Super.
Just got back from China.
You did get back from China?
Yeah.
Ah. In one piece?
Yes, almost.
Oh. I see. And you too. Strangers. So we have come to the part of the Heart Sutra that we just chanted, to the Four Noble Truths that are not, he says. Deshi Maru is giving us a wonderful lesson in how this Heart Sutra is contradicting everything that Buddha taught. He taught the Four Noble Truths, and in the Heart Sutra we say, no suffering, no origination, no stopping, no path, no cognition, also no attainment. All the things that the original teaching of Buddha is saying no. But what it's saying is no to the idea of it. That if you get stuck on the idea, then it's not true anymore. So that's the suffering that we create in our minds, because we can think and think with words. And as soon as we have words for something, then we hold on to them. And then we think it's true, and then we believe in them. And then we defend our belief, and then we're a million miles away from the truth of it. So that's why he calls it the Four Noble Truths that are not. He's encouraging us to understand them and study them deeply, but don't get stuck there. Really don't get stuck anywhere. That's the tricky part. He starts out talking about Bodhidharma and Eka. That poor Eka was the first person who got interested in Bodhidharma, who was sitting in a cave for years, close to the temple. Where they'd been practicing for a long time. And everybody thought he was a little crazy, just sitting by himself looking at the wall in the cave, because nobody did that. They did ceremonies, lots of ceremonies. And finally, one young man got very interested in what Buddha was doing, and especially because he was tortured by his thoughts, that he was trying to figure out how he could get to the source of everything. And he kept trying to figure out where was it. And of course, the more he thought about it, the more confused he got. And finally, he went to Bodhidharma and stood outside the cave, they say, for a long time before Bodhidharma finally turned around and noticed him. Probably knew he was there the whole time, but he turned around and saw him. And you'll see many paintings, the calligraphy-type paintings of Bodhidharma turning and looking with a sort of grumpy look on his face. And so Ekha comes to him and says, I can't figure this out. My mind is totally confused. And Bodhidharma says, show it to me. And Ekha said, well, look, I can't do that. And Bodhidharma said, there, fixed it for you. So that's how Deshi Maru begins this, about the mind that cannot be grasped. All one must do is to forget oneself. You cannot hold on to it. It's not like that. So the true source of suffering is the attachment to grasping something. So after he had attained Satori, the Buddha gave his first teaching on the Four Noble Truths, and this became the foundation of Buddhism. And Deshi Maru says, I can never overstress their importance. The truth, one, that the truth is that the phenomenal world is obscure, ignorant, and steeped in suffering. This is Deshi Maru's words, but this is a good way of describing it. The second one is the truth that the cause of the world of suffering, greed and desire, is born of ignorance. We talked about ignorance before. Three, the truth that the absolute world as lived through awakening is pure happiness and total serenity. And four, the truth that the way to attain this condition of peace and joy is the eightfold path followed by those of noble mind. I always think this is the most remarkable thing. It isn't some magical formula. It's just a good way to live your life. That number four is just a good way to be in the world so you don't suffer so much. And he outlines it based on our dissatisfaction. You could say that number one is just dissatisfaction. We're always dissatisfied about something. We're always kicking a tire or grouching or trying to change something and make it all better, or trying to adjust ourselves and make ourselves all better, when we're not clear about where we are or what we're doing. So Deshi Maru says, from right now, in an instant, we can end our suffering. That's the strength of the Buddha's teaching expressed by sitting peacefully in Zazen. And through the Fourth Noble Truth, which teaches the need to follow the Eightfold Path. And in the end, it's enough to forget yourself, to forget your ego, and all the sufferings of the world disappear of their own accord. You must begin by sitting peacefully, legs crossed, head straight, and let the whole painful story of humanity flow into your consciousness without intervening, without being frightened and trying to flee. That's a powerful statement. It doesn't mean that we sit and get beyond it or get above it or get somehow over it. It means we take it all in. So the Eightfold Path, this simple living, is his suggestion. The first one is, and there are all kinds of translations to whether it's right or correct or holy. View or vision or understanding. So it's allowing ourselves to drop our preconceptions and be open to understand the situation as it is rather than how we think it is. The second one is right thought or reflection without prejudice. To think about things without holding on to a particular way, waiting to be shown the right way. He says we must learn how to observe ourselves and discover our errors. This is right thought and reflection. From right thought, right behavior emerges in the form of right speech and right actions. So right speech is the next one. That's extremely important, as we all know. We can do so much harm with our speech, and we can confuse ourselves so much with the words that we use. If our mind is troubled, if we are submerged in illusion, our words follow suit and are violent, passionate, and false. This attitude is the seed of bad karma. So right behavior, right action, is right behavior in daily life. How we make our breakfast, how we speak to our child, how we treat our car, how we speak to our neighbor. All of those things, every single action of ours has an effect. I always say we leave a wake behind us, as if we're a little boat in the water, and we don't see the wake behind us. It's just a spinning water behind, but we're looking ahead. But we want to be careful about the wake that we leave behind. We need to be kind. So the next one is right livelihood. How do we make a living? Some people think, oh, well, that means that I shouldn't be a butcher, or I should be some kind of lofty, fancy, serving everyone and obscuring myself in the process. But it doesn't mean that. It just means being honest. Just being completely honest about what we do and do it the very best way we possibly can, whether it's being a butcher or a garbage man or our representative or our neighbor. It's just how we are. He says it requires a regular, well-ordered, well-considered life and a respect for duty. And I think that's important. It's not just a random thing. We actually, if we're working, we have a commitment. And we stay with the commitment respectfully. We respect it. It's not a demand on us. It's something that we choose ourselves and give ourself to. So really what we do when we work or enact our life is a service. It's just like serving the altar. Everything we do is like serving the altar. We just don't notice it. Number six is right effort. Takes a lot just to keep sitting. Just to sit for 40 minutes takes a lot of effort, as we have just experienced. Much less really holding to these suggestions, really taking them in. Number seven is right attention. And that's one of the crucial ones, and it's a very Zen one, I think, or really very Buddhist one. At least the Vipassana people use it to talk about ardency and fully aware, to be ardent and fully aware at all times. Ardent means loving, means passionate. It means really being there when you're really there. And in Zen, there's a story about somebody asking a master the essence of Buddhism, and he said, attention. And the guy said, well, yeah, but what's really? And he said, attention. And the guy said, well, yeah, but... And the master said, attention, attention, attention! In other words, who is it said, be here now? Don't go away. Just be here. Stay here. This is it. This needs us. So Deshi Mura says about this, don't forget that life is always changing and that it's empty. When we realize this, our troubles are calmed and attachments evaporate and fear fades away. There's no need to fear for our own lives. We do not need to torment ourselves. Our life is without innate reality. Our thought should express this understanding, i.e., don't take ourselves so seriously. Of course we're here, of course we have to be here, but it's all so ephemeral and so unreal in the end. We came, we don't know why, and we're going to go, we don't know how or why. It's very mysterious, and it's not fixed in any way at all. It's just a flow. Is just going and going and going continually. And as we pay attention to it, we begin to enjoy the change instead of resisting it. The resistance is our suffering. Oh, I don't like this the way it is. It was better last time. But last time is over. All we have is this time. And the last one is right concentration, or zazen. He says, when we attain this level of profound concentration, calm and serene, our mind no longer moves. It remains still in the dimension without space or time. It's called samadhi. There are many concentrations. You experience it when you're doing something really deeply interesting and you lose yourself. You lose the sense of yourself because you're painting a picture or writing a poem or you're driving a car. It's just the thing is happening and you're not really there. And then maybe sometime you think, oh, you know, here I am, pinch, pinch. But the reality is that the sense of samadhi is the reality of us. And the king samadhi is what Dogen called it, is our sitting practice itself. That's the samadhi of all samadhis, because we're not focusing on anything at all. We're just letting it all go. From profound concentration, from samadhi, he says, emanates infinite understanding and supreme wisdom. This is the condition of satori. So he's emphasizing the practice of zazen, of course. He says, with the mushotoku mind, we plunge into the universe of emptiness. So he ends by saying, true wisdom manifests itself during zazen without effort, without searching, without a desire to understand or obtain anything. Unconsciously, naturally, and automatically, it's realized through mushotoku mind, the mind without any desire for gain or reward. That's what mushotoku mind means. That is the essence of our zazen practice. And inevitably, when we sit down, we have some kind of notion about our goal, our intention. And it helps to have an intention, but the intention to have no intention is our goal. So it's very contradictory to our sense of logic, but the reality is it's the only way. That as soon as we drop the idea that we're going to get somewhere or get something, some special state, and just be there with whatever is there, just allow it, but keep the posture and keep the intention to keep breathing. Keep noticing your breath, being the body mind that is here in the present moment. That's the point. We can't erase ourselves. We can't turn it into something else. We are what it is. And each one is so different, so incredibly different. Then we can enjoy the difference of ourself. So often we try to fit in or change ourself in some way and be something else, but we don't have to. We don't have to. So that's that chapter. There are questions, comments?
with what you were saying, sometimes it feels like if per se I was by myself and no responsibilities, nothing, I could just let go and sit and, you know, just really have it all happen and drop and probably sort of walk on this path much, much smoother and really see the results. But as responsibilities grow on us, it's inevitable that we start thinking when there's other people or people that you work with, people that you interact with in your daily life, the condition depends on your condition.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to put in effort, and that effort draws inevitable attention to what's going to be, not necessarily to what is at all times.
That's right.
And there's this constant.
That's right.
That sometimes you take a few minutes in the middle of the day and you sit to let it settle, and it helps, but still, and I know you have to practice for a long time to get there, but this is a challenge that sometimes I ask myself, and I want to bring the mountains and the cushion to every moment of life, but it doesn't always happen.
No, because it's not a special state. You're not having a special state on the cushion that you're not having with the person that you're dealing with in an office. You can bring that samadhi with you wherever you go. You can sit on an airplane and talk to the person next to you, which is an ordinary kind of conversation, but you yourself can speak from that samadhi place and pay attention from in that samadhi place in that simple way that is in that Eightfold Path. That it isn't some escape. Zazen isn't an escape or a special state that puts us apart from everybody. It's that we learn how to be with everybody completely without attaching to any of it, without being caught by it. So it does take a lot of effort. But the effort is to be completely present and forget yourself when you're with people, so that you're not trying anymore. You're just listening to where they're coming from, and then you can respond. And you respond from here. You don't have to respond from up here. Because that's what samadhi and zazen teaches us, is how to connect with this first, and then how to respond from here, so that we're not so caught up in our thoughts and our fears and our trying to make things out of things. Just see what comes out, because that's wisdom.
Well, I'm really feeling an overwhelming desire to express the connection between Zazen and our Sangha, and how critical and important it is to an individual practice that we have this kind of group practice.
Yes.
And it's so lovely to have so many of you here for our very first sit, and I just wanted to express my gratitude. But making that connection between the importance of what I do when I'm not with you, but when I'm here with all of you, how critical it is to me, and that also is something that I think Zazen speaks to, is our Sangha. So I just wanted to thank you. You rang the bells just there.
Yes.
I missed it. So.
Exquisitely, yes. Thank you, Jeffrey. Absolutely right. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, it's all one thing. just different ways of talking about the same thing. Sangha. It's us. Well, it's 8 o'clock. So, do we have announcements? We don't have Marie here. What do we know? We've
Marie's
got a.
Not our,
yeah,
Violet's
oh, Violet's
e-note.
The e-note. Oh,
yeah.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
Wendy gets the announcements anyway, so
yes. But yes, we do have a Saturday sit this Saturday, 9 to noon. You're welcome to come in as you're able. Do we have an opener?
I will be coming to open, but if anyone can come in and help set up, I would appreciate it for anybody who's coming already. But I'll be here at 8:30, we start at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, helper would be very much appreciated. And then the a week from today, I think it's the 15th, is a business meeting that would be starting at about 10 minutes, 8:15 to 9, about 9. We'll try to keep it short. And our last business meeting was in July of last year. So there's been some developments, and you'll get to hear how we did at Sashin financially and how our bank balance is and all that juicy stuff. If you have suggestions that you'd like to be on the agenda, just let me know. And I'm going to mail out the calendar for the year shortly. And we'll try to get it on our website, too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, 1 minute, sit.